but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Got the bold-faced truth on the BFT Radio Network. John Canzano will be on in moments, and he's got Dan Lanning coming up on the show. Just a couple technical difficulties getting the show launched here today so far. Judah Newby here with you. Again, John Canzano coming up in moments as soon as we get this connection, which we will do at any moment now. Joys of broadcasting. Dan Lanning coming up later in the show, as well as Beavers wide receiver Trent Walker ahead of their game tomorrow night against Houston. In the meantime, as we restore our connection, we'll get you some sound ahead of this one, including Penn State head coach James Franklin on what's important ahead of this showdown with the Oregon Ducks.
All these type of games come down to 4 to 6 plays on offense, 4 to 6 plays on defense. A special teams play. Usually going to come down to a touchdown, a one score type game, one possession type game. I think it's going to be similar. When you have two programs that have had the type of success that we've both had over the last couple of years, the way the programs are built, the way the programs are supported, the level of support that we get from the community and the stadiums, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I expect this to be a four-quarter battle that's going to come down to the end of the game. And I like how we're preparing to handle the moment.
Penn State, the pressure is on them. Oregon is going to try to apply even more pressure on the Nittany Lions as well. Dan Lanning talking earlier this week, and he'll be on the show coming up in a little bit next hour with John Canzano. He's talking about pressure being a privilege.
Well, we said before, pressure is a privilege, right? And you come to Oregon to play in games like this, right? There's always pressure, right, for us every single time we step out there. But this is certainly a unique one. But that's what you're excited about.
And it's going to be a really fun test for the Ducks going into Happy Valley coming up on Saturday night. 4:30 on NBC. As for the Beavers, they've got a big one coming up tomorrow night hosting Houston. Trent Walker will be on the show coming up here in a few moments with John Canzano. Trent Bray was on yesterday talking about motivating the locker room despite 0-4 start to the season.
I don't know if people believe me when I say it or hard to believe, but it's been easy. These guys show up and work. It hasn't been hard to get them to come out and practice, and we had a really good week of practice. They're energetic. They're enthusiastic about what we get to do. So I've been very impressed with their maturity and their ability to continue to do that, because it is hard when you're in a stretch like we are.
All the outside noise speaks for itself as it relates to the Beavers, but if they are staying together, that's the most important thing. And it does trickle down from their head coach to their coordinators to their quarterback as well. Trent Bray previewing Friday's Houston game as well.
Yeah, they're a very good team. They're talented on both sides of the ball. They got really good athletes at the skill positions. And then they do a good job of executing what they do. So it's going to be a challenge for sure.
It is going to be a challenge. The Beavers are 2 touchdown underdogs at home against the Cougars tomorrow night, and it's going to be a tough test, but I think we've yet to see Oregon State play their best football, And as soon as they do, I think they'll be able to put together a product that they're more proud of. John Cazzano now back with us live here on the show.
All right. Well, all right. You're talking about Oregon State because Oregon's going to get a lot of run this week, right? Oregon has got a lot of run this week. Judah, what does Oregon State need to do in your mind?
Just play a clean football game. Play disciplined, play clean. Maybe not perfect, but more clean. They haven't given themselves a chance in these other home games against Cal and Fresno because they were so undisciplined and it got so messy. They limit the mistakes, and it's a short week, but they got to keep the confidence in themselves, limit their mistakes, snap the ball on special teams, give them a chance to win this game. I think they cover the spread. I don't know if they can pull off the win, but this is the best chance that they've had in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the betting market is overreacting a little bit to everything they've seen, and I don't blame them because it was ugly when they couldn't snap the ball against Fresno State, and I think it was ugly, obviously, at Texas Tech, and I'm eager to talk to Trent Walker, who's coming up. He joins us every Thursday, and ask him, you know, are the players talking to each other? What are the coaches saying? Because it's one thing, I think, for Trent Bray to say, oh, my guys are engaged and practicing well, but I think we're going to see it on Friday night. You know, if this team has mailed it in, if they have checked out, I think we're going to know it. The oxygen in the room, though, all go into that Oregon-Penn State game. We're going to be all over it tomorrow. Judah, before you go back to air traffic controlling here, do you have a feel for Oregon and Penn State? Because I'm leaning to Penn State in this game. I think that it means more to them.
Yeah, I am too, basically because of the coordinators. I think Kotelnicki and Knowles are the difference that James Franklin hasn't had on both sides of the ball. I remember when Oregon went into Ohio State a few years ago and beat them in the shoe as two touchdown underdogs, CJ Verdell running all over them. The Buckeyes clearly were a black hole defensively. Like they couldn't stop anything. And they have since shored that up. And they since shored that up by hiring Jim Knowles. And now obviously he's at Penn State. Home game, great talent, both sides of the ball. I think it's a really, really good test for Oregon, but I'm with you. I like Penn State and probably to win it by field goal. I think the spread is right on the number.
Let's talk a little bit about Oregon State, Houston, and then we'll get to Trent Walker coming up. The Oregon State wide receiver is going to join us. I don't know what to make of Houston because they haven't left the state of Texas. They played one road game at Rice, which isn't really a road game. It's not like they're, you know, flying across the country or leaving the time zone, not leaving the state. But they're a Big 12 team, and, you know, I watched them a little bit against Colorado, and I thought, you know, they got some guys. Like, they have some players. They have some playmakers. They have the guys that are going to, you know, give Oregon State potentially some problems. And I think that's where the breakdown has been for me for Oregon State, watching the guys that I thought Oregon State had, the two tight ends that they brought in at $250,000 a piece, and Malik Murphy, not very good against teams like Texas Tech and Oregon, played well against Fresno State. But as the talent level of the opposition comes down, I expect production of Oregon State's playmakers to go up. But I don't know that I trust it, Judah.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to trust it. I mean, you got to see it to believe it with this team right now. And it's funny that the $250,000 tight ends, you know, that's giving me sticker shock. With
no catches, no catches for those two guys.
I mean, look, what do you? I know you know Ryan Gunderson well. You know, we know Mike Kavanaugh well. You know, what's going on there? Why isn't there the production for the investment, the literal investment?
I think it's a get what you pay for scenario, and I mean no disrespect to Malik Murphy or those tight ends, but. You know, I know Jed Fish at Washington has talked about investment in his roster, and he's using an NFL model. And I just kind of wonder if Oregon State is a little behind the times, even though they're playing Moneyball. Are they behind the times as it pertains to understanding where to invest their money? Because Trent Bray can sit back and go, yeah, I need a pass rusher, I need a corner, I need a linebacker. But he's never managed a salary cap and never managed a roster in an NFL capacity. Those guys, it's an art and it's a science. And they know that, you know, they can dedicate a certain number to this position and a certain number to that position. And I did worry a little bit when I saw $1.5 million go into Malik Murphy. I'm just doing the math here on that roster. I would expect if you're paying $1.5 million for your QB that your overall maybe salary talent pool has got to be, you know, $9 or $10 million if you're paying $1.5 million for a quarterback. And I don't think that's what Oregon is at, or Oregon State is at. I think Oregon State is probably closer to $6 or $7 million total on that roster. And so I'm kind of looking at that going, are they a little out of balance there at that position? Do they have the guys that can block for Malik Murphy? Do they have the playmakers on the outside that'll make them better? Or did they just go, hey, these were our biggest holes last year. We didn't really have a quarterback who could throw the ball. We didn't have tight ends. You know, I'm turning on Michigan State's game against USC last week, and I'm watching Aiden Childs, I'm watching Jack Velling, and I'm going, those are the guys. Those are the guys they lost. And they replaced them with, you know, with players that are not as good. And so there's been a step back in production. So I think what happens is you get into a game against Fresno State, Malik Murphy went bananas. I mean, he looked great. The offense looked like it had all the problems solved. You get in a game against Texas Tech or Oregon, there's a problem up front. You can't block those guys. You can't get separation on the outside. I just think it's as simple as saying that the Jimmies and the Joes are better, and there's a big division between them. And when Oregon State gets in those games like against Texas Tech and against Oregon, I don't think they can compete. And when now Houston, that's going to be kind of middle of the road. And I think it'll be closer to the Cal game. I think Houston and Cal are great approximations. And so I think that point spread's a little fat at about 2 touchdowns. I think that, you know, it looks fat in those jeans, so to speak. So I think Oregon State can play within that point spread, but I'm not picking them to win this game. I think Oregon State and Oregon both have a chance this weekend to lose those games. I'd love to hear from our listeners at 503-417-7575. What do they see going wrong at Oregon State? Or how do you explain what is going? Do you have hope that this week is the week the Beavers turn it around? Or where does that hope rest? Is it another week? Is it at Appalachian State? Is it Wake Forest? Is it Lafayette? Like, you know, where is the bar for Oregon State? And then from Oregon's standpoint, you know, Duck fans, you've been hearing it all week. I got to know who you're picking in this game. Are you optimistic that Oregon's going to win this game? Or do you kind of look at it like I do? And I kind of see Oregon looking at last year's season against Ohio State. Oregon played like all the marbles were on the table at Autzen Stadium. The fans were jacked, had that feel that Penn State's got this week. And Dan Lanning on the field after the game last year, I'll never forget it. Like, he, you know, somebody put something around his neck. He was smiling. There were a lot of pictures being taken. It was like this cathartic moment for Lanning because he won a big one, right? He had lost those Washington games. He had lost even a Civil War game 2 years earlier. And it was a big, big win for Dan Lanning. And then kind of a reality set in throughout the season, like, oh, yeah, this is a really long season. Now, he did get the Big Ten championship. They never lost a conference game. I got to give him credit. And Lanning's coming on the show today at 4:20. We'll talk to him. But I kind of looked last year and I thought, gosh, did Oregon see beating Ohio State at Autzen Stadium as like getting to the finish line? And I kind of wonder about Penn State in that capacity. Penn State and Oregon are both considered upper echelon Big Ten teams. There are four brands at the top of the Big Ten, and it's Oregon, it's Penn State, and of course it's Ohio State and Michigan. And that's it. And then there's a gap after that where everybody goes, hey, is USC ever going to get there? Or is anybody else, can one of these other schools get there? So I am looking at this game from Penn State's perspective and going, there is so much at stake for the Nittany Lions. This is so big, and the whiteout crowd, and it just kind of feels to me like there's a little bit of a feel like there was last year at Autzen when Ohio State came to town. And I don't know if Ohio State knew what they were walking into, but I think if you're you're an Ohio State fan, you know after that game started, it was awful loud at Autzen, and it meant an awful lot to the Ducks in particular to win that game. And I feel like this one against Penn State has that same feel. I'll throw it back to you, Judah. Like, you know, I keep saying Penn State wins the battle, but who wins the war? I think there's an NFL-like parallel where, you know, we used to think like these games were like must-win situations. It's not a must-win when Buffalo is playing Baltimore in the opening week of the season. It's just a really good game. And, hey, this could be a preview of what we see in the AFC Championship. I have that feel about Oregon and Penn State.
I think you're exactly right. The funny thing is, like, who psychs themselves out more for this game? Like, I could see a scenario where Penn State almost succumbs to the pressure a little bit. Not that they haven't played in these big games before, but they haven't won them. I wonder if they get inside of their own head. They've always had talented teams, arguably more talented teams. I mean, Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren on last year's unit. James Franklin's been in these scenarios before. I do think Jim Knowles running the defense, he's probably the X factor in this game when it's all said and done, because we've seen what he's done against Oregon in two iterations last season, most notably the Rose Bowl. But I don't know. There's part of me that wonders if Penn State psychs themselves out during clutch situations. And at the end of the day, 18 to 22-year-olds, right? I mean, with money, like, who knows? Who knows how they will react to these situations? Hopefully Oregon's the team that's more poised. They're going to have to be to win this game on Saturday night.
I think it's a lot to ask, too, of Dante Moore. Joel Klatt on Fox was talking about Dante Moore versus Penn State's defense and how that is a key in this game.
I think it's going to be incredibly tough for Oregon and their young quarterback, even though he's 3 years now out of high school. But Dante Moore is going to be going into an environment that really he hasn't seen before. This is going to be one of the toughest environments that he's ever going to play in as a quarterback. And this team is going to have to run the football well. They've got a really deep stable of running backs, really six deep at running back. I like their offensive line a lot. They rebuilt that in the transfer portal, and they've got some real weapons on the outside. Now, I think Dante Moore is going to be built for this. I think that he's going to play well. I do think that there's going to be some trouble for them at some point because of that environment.
And I've been talking to a lot of people who have played games at Penn State who know what that environment's like, and they tell me that you cannot hear, you cannot communicate, you can't hear the call in the huddle. It just creates a lot of problems. And you can practice for that. And Oregon's going to, you know, Dan Lanning's going to come on. He's going to talk about practicing for the noise and all that and, you know, some things they can do. But I think, like, we saw Dante Moore two seasons ago at UCLA not play well in big situations. Pick sixes, bad decisions, and I've watched him play really well against Montana State and Oklahoma State and Oregon State, but this is a different animal, and this is a better team. Jim Knowles is going to say, hey, look, I'm going to go man-to-man on the outside. I'm going to get after Dante Moore. It's going to be incumbent on Oregon's offensive line in that environment where they can't hear to try to keep the pressure off Dante Moore, but I don't know that you can avoid that in a Jim Knowles situation, because I think he's going to bring guys, and I think Oregon's offensive line is going to struggle a little bit to block those guys, particularly because they're talented, but also because Jim Knowles does a really good job as a coordinator of getting his guys in a positive position to make your quarterback uncomfortable. And we have not seen Dante Moore with real pressure. He has not, to this point of the season, he has not had to endure that. And I'm not rooting against him. Like, I think by the end of the year, Oregon will be in a much better, different position. Like, I think he's just going to grow and grow. He's going to get better. I think he's already getting better. But I just don't think at this point of the season, I have faith that he will handle that environment as well as he needs to for Oregon to win this game. It's why I keep saying I think Penn State's going to win a close game. I have it like 4 points. I think points are going to be hard to come by. I do think Penn State could get to 30, but I don't see much more than that. I think this could be like 30 to 24. It could be 31-27. I have something like that. I do think Penn State will cover and win this game. But I think the narrative for Oregon's going to be, okay, we lost a game in a tough environment, but now back to the drawing board, and oh, guess what? You have many more big games coming up, but the name of the game for Oregon this season is go win 10 games. Go be 10-2. 10-2 is going to get you into the college football playoff if you're Oregon with playing in the Big Ten Conference. You don't need to go 12-0. You don't need to be 13-0 and be the conference champion. You don't need to win every single Big Ten game. So I think this is kind of an opportunity for Oregon to go out and demonstrate that they don't have to be perfect, that, you know, you can lose games. And I could imagine that it will be a difficult thing for any team to lose their first game in conference play, especially with all the success that Oregon had, certainly a year ago, and getting into the Big Ten and then showing that they belong by not losing to anybody. But that's nice. But you know what's better than that? Better than that is hosting a playoff game at Autzen Stadium, getting to host that game and then getting, you know, to play into the semifinals or potentially the championship round, and then, you know, letting that ride and letting it, you know, nobody remembers that, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs were the 5 seed in trying to get themselves to the Super Bowl a couple years ago. All they remember is them winning the Super Bowl. And you know, going on the road and winning the Super Bowl in every round or winning every playoff game. And so I do think we have to adopt kind of a college football NFL slash mentality that we never had before. Season feels incredibly long to me. It's a never ending, unrelenting siege at this point. And I know fans probably feel it. As a media member, I'm feeling it. I've got to pace myself differently in this era of the CFP than I did before. It was an eye-opener last year when I got to the end of the season. Oregon played in the Big Ten championship game, and I looked up and I was like, oh, it's just starting. Here come the playoffs. This is just beginning. And then it felt like, gosh, this is just different. Gosh, do we need to hydrate better during the regular season as media members and fans? Do we need to adjust our mentality? Do we need to accept that, like, losing a game on the road is, that's just part of the journey, and teams are going to lose games, you know, and I think Ohio State was a great example of that a year ago. All right, Trent Walker, the Oregon State wide receiver, is coming up. We got a great show for you, including Dan Lanning at 4:20. I want you here for all of it. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Every Thursday this season, Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, has joined us in this hour to talk about his upcoming game and his favorite Jamba and his childhood. We have hit on it all. He is joining us now. You got a big football game tomorrow night against Houston. It's a weird week, isn't it, with a short week? Tell us how that changes your week.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on again. With the short week, you really got to bounce back and recover as quick as possible. Houston's coming off a bye, and we're on a short week, so they have almost double the amount of preparation on us, but we feel good about it going in. It's a more condensed game plan. We're focusing on doing what we know how to do well, and the theme is just executing.
Give us an idea. Is it a physical bounce back? Is it a psychological bounce back when you have a short week?
It's a little bit of both. Ever since I got to college, I've noticed that that your body really takes a beating playing college football. So on the physical side, not having that extra day hurts a little bit. But our waist staff did a good job of getting us up and moving, rather than us just laying around, because our thing is movement is medicine. Mm-hmm. And then in the mind, it's just you. It's nicer having a short week because you flushed the last game quicker than usual. Obviously, that one hurt, but we have no time to dwell on it.
Let's go back to that game. You guys had something going in the run game in the first quarter. It was a frustrating game, I think, from a passing standpoint. What was Oregon doing that made the pass game difficult?
Yeah, what I noticed was they were playing a lot of cloud or cover two. So they had whenever I was in the boundary, we had a corner who was playing the flats and then a safety over the top, which always makes it difficult to get those quick ones. And then we took advantage of it, though, because you guys saw it in the run game. We're running the ball pretty well for a little bit. We had 4 or 5 yards a pop, and it was working for us.
What's that feel like when you have the run game going, and then, you know, it felt to me at the end of the first quarter like you guys had to be feeling pretty good about where you were, and then at some point it just, you know, Oregon's depth and, you know, maybe their talent kicked in, and it's difficult to stay with that if you're not moving the ball and scoring points.
Yeah, I think when we went into the locker room at halftime, we felt real good about it. We're going into the second half knowing that we were going to try and continue to run the ball as well as we were. I think it really just came down to us not staying on the same mindset that we were the first half. I think we got a little too, I don't want to say comfortable because that's not the word, but the first half is Oregon State football and the second half wasn't, and the score reflected that.
I think you take some positives away from the game. And I know, you know, and I say that people go, oh, you're just being, but I kind of left that game thinking that you guys had fixed some things. Am I wrong to say that?
No, I don't think you're wrong to say that at all. I think the first half really showed the country and ourselves that, like, we're a good team if we just do what we do. If we try and go out there and we're not executing, we have someone trying to be a hero and we have dudes not doing their job, then it's just like any other team, like, you're going to end up losing. So there's always positives, but that one did hurt.
Trent Walker with us every week as part of our tribute to Jamba, this in a segment brought to you by Jamba. Trent, let me ask you this. Students back on campus, what has it felt like to see bodies moving around campus, bicycles, people moving in?
Yeah, it's nice. In the summer, Corvallis is a little bit of a ghost town. There's not, the population isn't crazy. Coach Bray said something today like, make sure you guys are leaving your places a little earlier. There's going to be more traffic. I think he said something like 30,000 more people in the city of Corvallis. And when you look at it that way, you get excited about playing on Friday night in front of the crowd for the first time.
Do you remember moving in, the first experience? Did you go into the dorms as a freshman?
Yeah, I remember. I was living in the dorms for a whole year.
Okay, so do you remember the move-in and all of that? What do you remember from that? Take us through it for people who haven't done it or maybe haven't done it in a long time.
Yeah, it was hectic for sure. We had to be here in June, so we got to move in without the whole population of the students and undergrads. But I remember it being super hectic. We tried to fit everything in one car with my parents. Luckily I had them to put a whole bunch of stuff in this one huge cart. So we only took two trips. But it was hectic. It was hot. It was middle of summer in June. I remember just being super excited to be at college for the first time.
I am excited about this football game. What do you see when you look at Houston on film?
Yeah. Houston's a talented team. They got some talent on the defensive side of the ball. But one thing Bray's emphasized is we've seen some of the best teams in the country already. Not to take anything away from Houston or the rest of the teams that we played, but going down to Tech and then going into Oregon, we have no reason to be timid against any team. I think someone told me that we had the second hardest schedule these first four games in the country, which is, you take that with a grain of salt, because it's like, if we've seen some of the best teams in the country, what's stopping us from going on a little win streak?
Yeah, I was looking at that too. Your strength of schedule is the number two schedule in the country. And behind you is Notre Dame. After that is Florida. And, I was trying to figure out, Georgia State in the Sun Belt, they say they've had the toughest schedule in the country. Here's who they've played. They played Ole Miss on the road. They played Memphis at home. They played Murray State at home. And they played at Vanderbilt. I kind of think you had it harder. I think playing at Oregon and at Texas Tech beats going to Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. So I guess the metrics come down to Memphis, Murray State against, a Fresno State in there and a Cal. But the number two schedule in the country gives you, I think, makes you battle tested. What kind of confidence do you have that you guys can spin out of this? Because now, these final eight games, there's some wins in here. And how many is up to you guys? But what kind of confidence do you have that you guys can put it together and play your best football?
I think the whole locker room feels good about these next eight games. At this point, just leaving everything on the field. We only got eight more opportunities guaranteed. If you look at last year, we started off the season real well. And then, unfortunately, we went on a losing streak. So it's like, what's the difference between just flipping the script of that and breaking this losing streak and going on a little run.
Trent, the I know the personal stuff doesn't matter, but you need to touch the football. And you know, I thought, you know, you not getting a catch last week was not good for the offense. When Trent Walker's getting 7, 8, 10, you know, targets, that's when this offense is going well. Are you guys doing anything different to help get you the ball? Because if I'm Houston, I'm playing cover two.
Yeah, I think that game was frustrating to say the least. But like I said, we were running the ball well. For me, it just comes down to what can I do to help the team win. And in the Oregon game, it was blocking on the perimeter or going down and digging out a safety. We got a few wrinkles in the game plan, but I think the biggest thing for me is I'm ready to win, man. I'm tired of losing. If me not catching the rock means we win a game, so be it.
Love that. Yeah. Are you guys still focused and engaged? Because I know that it gets tough if you don't get a result, but your coach came on the show this week, said he feels like the locker room, you had good practices, locker room's engaged. You agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so. I got the captains together and we did like a player only meeting. And it wasn't on any like motivational stuff. It was kind of just, all right, let's move on. Let's turn the page. I think just hearing other guys in the room talk, I think that made people buy in just a little bit more. And I would agree with Coach Gray. I think the energy at practice, has been just as good as the energy was at camp, surprisingly with our record, but we got a good group of guys and we just got to put things together, man.
Trent Walker, you're the best. I appreciate you making time. Good luck to you on Friday night and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you. Go Beavs.
All right, there he goes, Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. They will play on Friday night on ESPN against Houston. They are 0-4. They need a win. What did he say? I'm tired of losing. I want you to leave it here. We have so much more ahead on today's show, including Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. He'll be with us at 4:20. I want you here for it. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750, The Game.
It wasn't meant for teams in that expansion era, the Mariners expansion era in the late 70s. It wasn't meant for those teams to win early. That's not how it was built. And further, the Mariners didn't have a great front office. First maybe 15 years of that organization's history, front office wasn't great. The Yankees and the Red Sox and the Indians were dominating the American League during the time in which the Mariners got good, even. The 1995 team, probably one of the best teams to not win a World Series, lost in the championship series. And people ask me all the time, they say, why haven't the Mariners won a World Series? And I say, well, the fact that they don't get to a World Series is part of it. This team is capable. This Mariners team is capable not just of winning their division, not just of winning the AL, the American League. They are capable of winning it all. They have a good lineup. They've got good pitching. I am sitting forward in my seat this baseball postseason because I think the Mariners have a shot. They have a shot, and baseball is such a quirky, weird game, and it is unforgiving that you got to play well once you get there. But, man, you got to give Kyle Rowley a lot of credit for the fact that they are where they are. But why isn't Kyle Rowley getting the credit? Jeff Passan, ESPN, talking to Dan Patrick here about why Aaron Judge should be the American League MVP.
Aaron Judge's OPS right now is 175 points higher than Cal Raleigh's. Are you telling me that because Cal Raleigh has a home run total that ends in a round number, And that because Cal Raleigh happens to play with really good guys surrounding him and a team that went out and got Josh Naylor and Geno Suarez at the deadline that helped push them toward that division title. Are you telling me all that makes up, along with the defensive elements, for that 175-point gap, which is real, which is significant, and which is enormous?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm with Dan Patrick. Cal Raleigh getting to 60 home runs and the Mariners being where they are in the American League is all I need to see in this American League MVP race. He needs two home runs to tie Aaron Judge's American League record of 62. It's crazy to see him at 60. Yeah, three home runs to break the record over the final four games. You tell me how that goes. But I find it interesting that so many people want to go to Aaron Judge and New York and ignore the fact that, like, a player who is carrying a team in an era where, a franchise that has
Aaron
never...
Judge's OPS right now is...
I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear about his OPS. I'm looking at the Mariners going, this team could win a World Series. They're that good, and they've got a player in Cal Raleigh that is carrying them. That is enough for me. I love that Dan Patrick stood tall there. The truth of the matter is that, you know, Aaron Judge is a great player. Aaron Judge, you know, this MVP thing, it's like splitting hairs in some leagues and some days and some seasons. But you can't ignore what Cal Raleigh has done. And no, we're not saying just because his home run total ends in a round number. We're not saying just because the Mariners went out and got guys. We're saying that without Cal Raleigh, the Seattle Mariners are not the American League, you know, West champions. They're not potentially the American League champions. And they're nowhere near this World Series conversation without him in the season that he's put together. It is quite literally the most valuable season in baseball presented by any player. And the Mariners deserve a ton of credit, and Cal Raleigh deserves credit. And I hope he gets his due. I hope that the usual suspects don't just vote for Aaron Judge and others and dismiss the contributions of Cal Raleigh. Speaking of big-time things that are going on, I would be remiss if I didn't just for a moment recognize the University of Portland men's soccer team. Nick Carlin-Voigt and UP men's soccer have risen in the national rankings. If you don't know where they are, be educated. They are number two in the nation, highest rank since 1992, I believe. Incredible that Nick Carlin-Voigt and the Pilots are where they are. I feel like we should get them on the show more often because of that. You know, they've got, you know, highest rank in the history of the program, second in the country. They're home on Saturday against Gonzaga. It's their homecoming at 7 o'clock. Oh, hell, there he is on the back line, Nick Carlin-Voigt, as coincidence would have it. Hey, congrats, number two.
That's great, John. Thanks for having me. Good to speak with you again. Great to get up there. It's definitely something we embrace. It's great publicity for the university. It's a great accomplishment for a young man. We've had a really strong start to the season, 6-0-1, top 10 in every major poll, and then our peers ranked us two in the country, which is the highest ever in the coaches' poll. So kudos all the way around. The non-conference has gone really well, nearly perfect. Had a really good win against Denver, who was in the Final Four. We were on top of them for most of the game. We were winning 3-0 up until the last 5 minutes and ended up getting two back. But it's always good to learn a lesson after a win. So now season two starts. We got a big game Saturday for homecoming. We play Gonzaga, who's a very good team. And now everyone in the WCC is 0-0. And WCC this year is really strong. I think 22 conferences in men's soccer, and we're the fourth-ranked RPI conference in the country. So we know that the hard games are ahead, but we're really pleased with what's behind us and only looking forward.
You beat Denver 3-2, big one for you. Joe Highfield is the WCC's Offensive Player of the Week. That is the third week in a row, I think, for University of Portland to have the WCC Player of the Week. But how do you build this thing, Nick? I know you've had success, but we've talked for a lot about how college athletics is changing, and yet you keep winning.
Yeah, we got to evolve. You know, I think the last words of any dying business is we always did it this way, or this is how we've always done it in the past, and we've had to evolve. but not in our philosophy and values. You know, we have five guys who are starting for us who are redshirts, who didn't play their first year. And I think it's the way that you treat people, the vision that you have. Players only leave if three things happen. You know, not having fun, they can't reach their goals and dreams as a team, and then they can't get to where they want to go maybe at the next level professionally. And we've been really proud. I think we've had 30 young men from Portland since I've been here go on to the next level. Over 10 guys have been drafted. We've been in the top 10 in the country, John, you know, four of the last 4 years at some point. Elite Eight 2 years ago. I think we've been best in class in a lot of ways, maybe a best kept secret. And we know that we're going to have to keep fighting for our respect. But we're also not happy either. Like we want to keep winning championships. We want to keep pursuing greatness. We're not afraid to say we want to chase two championships. That's a WCC championship, which San Diego's won, you know, the last 3 years. And the program has never won a national championship on the men's side. And so I think it's good to have big goals. I'm an aggressive coach. I have a big vision, a bold vision that's supported by our athletic director, Scott Lakem, and our president, Dr. Kelly, that, you know, this is Soccer City USA. We don't have a men's football team. Why not make this the premier destination in the Northwest, the West Coast, if not the country, to play college soccer? If you haven't been to a game at Merlot Field, come out this Saturday. It's going to be a great event. There's going to be food trucks outside. There's homecoming festivities. The weather is great. It is a beautiful place to watch a game. And I think our product is really exciting. You know, we put the ball down. We play attacking football. We love to get to goal. We love to score goals. Our young men are in the community. We have a 3.6 GPA. They graduate. They do things the right way. And I think they're just a really good example of all the good things going on at UP right now.
You know, a kid like David Ajogbe, you know, played at Ohio State last year, stud freshman, been great for you since transferring. How do you get a kid like that to come and go, hey, UP is where I need to be?
Well, the funny thing is we actually had him on an official visit, and the coach at the time, which was me, didn't recruit him. So, you know, he wanted to come back home. Recruiting is an inexact science. Ohio State did a great job with him. He went on the portal. They had a really good team last year. He was looking for a change. We're able to sell him on the vision here. You know, we continue to beat out, I think, you know, schools with high NLI budgets and, you know, SEC, Big 12. I'm going to brag a little bit. We have seven wins against the Big 10 since I've been here. And so in no ways do we operate like a mid-major program in any way, fashion. We want to be a major program. You know, we don't get to say that, but, you know, I think our winning percentage at home the last 10 years, the pros that we've produced, I think you saw the pathway that Brandon Cambridge had from the Whitecaps where David's from, and saw that Brandon was able to reach his goals and dreams here. He's able to be, you know, offensive player of the year in the WCC, get to an Elite Eight, you know, really a free kick away from the Final Four. And then ultimately Brandon was able to pursue his dreams, and he's in his third year as an MLS pro for Charlotte. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, there's this big talk of Power Four dominance, and that's real. They can have the smoothie bars and NLI packages and all the big donors. But I still think players want to be pushed. They want to be around guys who are going to help them. They want to be in a competitive environment where they have to earn it. And ultimately, I think there's something to be said about, you know, the magic of Merlot Field and what we've been able to create. Long before I got here, we just had to re-energize that fan base and really, you know, put a product on the field that was exciting. And these guys have done a great job with that. So I think, you know, recruiting is the lifeblood of any college program. You got to have good players. Dan Lanning just said that. Like, you got to have good players to win. Any good coach has good players. And our recruiting class, you know, always ranked in the top 10 in the country. We're always competing against the best of the best. And, you know, we want to recruit our kind of guys that are humble, that are talented, that are team first. That are process-based, that want to improve, that want to be coached hard, but also want to be supported. I'm a very compassionate coach, but I'm a very competitive coach. And, you know, I expect a lot of myself. I expect a lot of our coaches. And I expect a lot of the players. And I think players want that. Players want to have high standards. You know, they want to have pressure in the right way. And we believe that pressure is a privilege. It's not something that's going to stop us, or we're not going to be afraid of that. We're not going to, you know, run away from those high standards. And the standard is the standard. And that's one of our mantras here is, you know, we're always going to have the bar really, really high.
Nick Carlin-Voigt, our guest, University of Portland men's soccer. They're home on Saturday night, 7 o'clock at Merlot Field. They're playing Gonzaga. It is homecoming and family weekend. All right, keep it going, man. You know, I know it's where you finish, not where you start, but I want to give you a fist bump. Being number two is not too shabby.
Yeah, it's a great feather in our cap, and it's behind us. We move on and start season two. And, you know, our mindset now is to go 1-0 in every match. So come on out. It's going to be rocking Saturday night. Come out and support the Pilots. If you've been to some games, come back. If you've never been, bring your kids, your family, your neighbors. Come on out. It's great, cheap fun.
All right, Nick, keep it up. There's Coach Nick Carlin-Voigt, University of Portland men's soccer. They are the number two ranked team in the country. That is, you know, they're one of the best soccer teams in the country right here in our backyard. Go check them out. This weekend's going to be a huge weekend for sports, obviously, with Oregon playing that 4:30 kickoff against Penn State. Oregon State has the Friday night game. We have so much more ahead on the show, including Dan Lanning, who will be joining us in the 4 o'clock hour. And that is, just a few minutes away. We'll have Punch and Audio as well. And we'll lead you right into Thursday night football right here on 750 The Game. But good stuff from Nick Carlin-Voigt. See, I just talk about a good guest, and I talk about, you know, the mojo they've got going and the momentum they've got going. All I have to do is speak about it for just a second, and then ultimately, boom, they're on the back line. That's how it works here. We'll keep talking about it. Like, we'll manifest Dan Lanning in the 4 o'clock hour. And then who else? Tomorrow's show is going to be good. Jerry DiNardo, former LSU coach, former Vanderbilt coach, former Indiana coach, now on the Big Ten Network. Jerry DiNardo will be with us. Jake Butt, former Michigan tight end, is going to talk about what it's like to play in a whiteout situation. And we'll go boots on the ground to Happy Valley, where Brian Capel will talk to us about what it's like to live in Penn State territory. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach, will be with us at about 4:20. I want you here for it. Lanning will be joining us. Where is Lanning right now? Are the Ducks already on the road? I have people who look into such things, and they're telling me there's some confusion about where Oregon is. Did they leave already? Are they about to leave? We will talk to Lanning, and I'll ask him that at 4:20. What is the protocol? He'll be joining us at 4:20 to talk about it, the big football game. What else should I ask Dan Lanning? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me what you want me to ask Lanning. It'll be his last live interview, probably before game day and all the hoopla. We're going to play some Punch and Audio. We're going to lead you right into Thursday night football. Big game for Judah Newby and his Seahawks. How are you feeling?
You know,
excited?
I'm uncomfortably confident. I think Seattle wins by a couple scores, and that's the kiss of death.
Okay, because you feel good about it,
yeah.
And you know how that goes.
Yeah.
Nothing makes sense to me in the NFL. Like, you know, when Cleveland beats the Packers, and I think last weekend it was... You know, it was like the first weekend in NFL history where they had multiple pick sixes, multiple field goals blocked for touchdowns, multiple punt returns for touchdowns. And then I kind of look back and I go, 49ers struggle but barely beat the Cardinals at home. And I think the Niners are about even, if not maybe a touch better than the Seahawks, but you feel a couple of touchdowns difference. What gives you the confidence? A couple of touchdowns.
Well, I'll say a couple scores. I'll say 10 points or more. And,
okay.
And really, it's the James Conner injury. He, you know, fractured his ankle against San Francisco. And that on a short week to change your offense enough for that. And Marvin Harrison hasn't been exactly what they've been looking for yet. Kyler Murray's record against the Seahawks is really bad. And Seattle's got reinforcements on defense. Devin Witherspoon's playing tonight. He's missed the last two games. He's kind of the X factor on defense. They can do anything they want with him. And Julian Love was their communicator at safety. So, and they're, you know, it was a stress-free win Sunday, whereas it was a really stressful loss Sunday for Arizona. So put all that stuff together. I like where Seattle's at. Hopefully getting to 3-1. Before their little mini bye week here. But as I say that, I know, you know, I'm sure they'll lose.
how about Kansas City and Baltimore sitting there in this one and two position, is that an elimination game? Is that a panic game? Can too much be made of a game like that this weekend?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that, too much is going to be made of that game regardless. Because you tell me, John, if Kansas City makes the playoffs as, say, the sixth seed.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, if they make it, they're dangerous.
Right? So that's them. For Baltimore, it's like, I was telling this to someone the other day. I feel like they can win literally any game they play if they don't beat themselves. And Derrick Henry fumbled against Detroit. Lamar Jackson fumbled in the red zone against Detroit on a fourth down. Derrick Henry fumbles against Buffalo. Yeah. If they don't fumble, they win. Lamar fumbles at Buffalo in the playoff game last year. Zay Flowers fumbles at the goal line in the AFC Championship against Kansas City. If they don't turn the ball over, they beat anybody, including potentially this game against the Chiefs. So I can't rule them out either. I mean, look, I think they started 1-2 last year. They started 0-2 last year with losses to the Chiefs and the Raiders were terrible. And you look up and they're obviously playing deep into January. So that's the NFL, right? Like you were saying in your opening segment, it's really the long game in that league.
Yeah. And I think college fans are just learning to acclimate to it or adjust to it and accept it, because I think there's a really good chance. And I think the odds makers could put a percentage on it, but I just say like kind of what I feel like there's a 70% chance that Penn State beats Oregon on Saturday. I just kind of think it lines up for Penn State in the same way that the Ohio State game lined up, that first game lined up for Oregon last year. It just kind of lines up, and I see it going that way. And if I had to predict it, and I did, I'd made my picks today. I picked Penn State to win and to cover the 3 points, barely, but they cover. And I see it that way. And I think if that happens, there's going to be a faction of Oregon fans who have this dread about it. And I know because I put the pick out and I immediately heard from friends who texted me and said, no, you picked against Oregon. And I'm like, it's okay. A, I might be wrong. B, if they lose the game, this is kind of like the Chiefs losing the opener. You know, this isn't the end of the season. Ohio State proved it. You can lose. It matters how you lose, potentially. But Oregon can lose twice and make the playoff. And I think Dan Lanning knows that. I don't think he's going to say it in 15 minutes when he comes on with us. I don't think Will Stein will say it. But I'm watching how they're managing their players this season, and they're pulling guys out in the fourth quarter. They're playing the long game. I'm going to ask him about that for sure. And I want to know where he is. Are they already there? Are they on the plane? Is he calling me from the plane? Are they in Eugene just about to take off? We're going to find out. All right, let's play some Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Penn State coach James Franklin, he gets the knock. He can't win the big ones. He says the big ones come down to this play and that play.
All these type of games come down to 4 to 6 plays on offense, 4 to 6 plays on defense. A special teams play, usually going to come down to a touchdown, a one score type game, one possession type game. I think it's going to be similar. When you have two programs that have had the type of success that we've both had over the last couple of years, the way the programs are built, the way the programs are supported, the level of support that we get from the community and the stadiums, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so this is, I expect this to be a four-quarter battle that's going to come down to the end of the game. And I like how we're preparing to handle the moment.
Yeah, he's saying we're prepared, and he's also preparing his fan base that, hey, this comes down to like 3 or 4 plays. Oregon Ducks center, Ipani Pancho Lalolu, talking about preparing for Penn State. I did my best.
For me, honestly, a lot of people talk about it being a big game. It's most definitely a big game, but for me, it's just like another game, you know. You know, I just take it into consideration. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like I tell people, you know, you don't have to get too high or too low. We just got to remain cool, calm, and collected throughout the whole game. We're preparing right now just to go into their environment. We know that they got a lot. It's very loud in there. But if we just continue just to harp on the little things and just being able to stay focused and cool and calm, collected throughout the whole game, you know, it's just going to set out for us.
That is the name of the game. Stay cool, stay calm, stay collected. Also, though, if you're, you know, an Oregon player, you got to keep your wits. You know, some bad things are going to happen in this game. There's going to be some negative plays. There's going to be some occasions, particularly on that offensive line, where you can't hear the guy to your left, you can't hear the guy to your right, and, you know, I'm not saying you're winging it, but, you know, the Penn State defense is watching the snap. You're listening for it. You can't hear your quarterback. You know, there are going to be some negative things that happen. It will be up to Oregon to show a little bit of resilience in this game. I'm excited to see how the offensive line handles it, but I am so stoked that we're going to get an opportunity to see Dante Moore deal with some adversity. How will he handle that? The last time I saw him in real adversity was a couple years ago against, UCLA opponents, and there were some bad things that happened. So I think Dante gets a chance to get some reps that are meaningful reps that will help him come January, come December, when the games and the stakes are much, much bigger. Dan Lanning joining us coming up. Jeff Schwartz, former Oregon offensive lineman, played in the NFL, says these are the keys to Oregon playing at Penn State.
How to win the line of scrimmage, as we know, win first down to help our tackles out with that pass rush, and then really got to force Drew Aller, Jim, to be the offense for Penn State. I think if you're able to stop the run, which is hard. No one stops the run against Penn State. They have those two great backs, that good offensive line. But if you still have to stop the run and make Drew Aller beat you, and he beats you, you just like hat tip and you move on, right? So I'm excited. I can't wait to watch it. I think it's a close game either way. I think it's low scoring. I think we have the better quarterback. I think we got the better coaching staff. And I expect us to win.
There it is, Jeff Schwartz. He's in it. I mean, he makes no, you know, he's a media member, but there's no pretense about Schwartz. You know, he loves it. He lives it. I see it kind of the same way. I mean, I think it's very easy to say you got to make Drew Aller beat you. And that, I think, is the name of the game for Oregon is, you know, if you can take the run game away from Penn State and force Drew Aller to go to the air, I'll take my chances there if I'm Tosh Lapoy. I also, though, am left thinking, like, it's easier said than done. Like, we have seen teams try to do this in the past and fail. Penn State, very physical at the point of attack. Offensive line is great. Running backs are good. They've got good coaches. It's going to be a hell of a game. It's going to be fun, fun, fun. Trent Bray, Oregon State coach, was on yesterday's show. I asked him, has it been difficult to motivate his locker room? Here's his answer.
You know, I think, I don't know if people believe me when I say it, or hard to believe, but it's been easy. These guys show up and work. It hasn't been hard to get them to come out and practice, and we had a good, really good week of practice. They're energetic. They're enthusiastic about what we get to do. So I've been very impressed with their maturity and their ability to continue to do that, because it is hard when you're in a stretch like we are.
Difficult when you're in a stretch like that. Trent Walker, Oregon State receiver, saying that there was a players-only meeting. I love that. That the players met, talked about things amongst themselves. I think, obviously all of this is part of the story of Oregon State this season, but I think we're going to look back and we're not going to judge the Beavers necessarily on the first four games of the season. We're going to judge them on what they do in the next eight. Can they go 5-3 in the next eight? Will that change how we feel about Trent Bray and how fans feel about the start of the season? Could they go 6-2? Is there a scenario out there where they absolutely turn it around and we look back and go, gosh, they were just playing really good teams. The schedule was front-loaded. This was a 6-win team all along. You know, they gave one away against Fresno State. There's no way around it. It was embarrassing to watch them give that game away. But I think there's just a lot of ball to play, and you know, I think we're in like chapter three of a 12 chapter story for Oregon State, if I can say chapter. Sam Darnold, Short week for the Seahawks. They got the Cardinals tonight, Thursday night football.
Another great challenge for us this week, man. Just a lot of respect for Coach Gannon and the way that, you know, he's got his entire team going right now. You know, that defense is rolling. They always present, you know, issues for an offense, just all the different looks that they can give and, you know, what they do in the back end, disguising coverages and, you know, the guys that they have rushing the passer, you know, the linebackers that they have. I mean, they're a really solid group. You know, they're tough to prepare for, but we're excited for the challenge on a short week.
Big challenge, short week. Sam Darnold and the Seahawks ready. Tough division. And a division that I would argue is wide open. Judah, you're a Seahawks fan. I'm a Niners fan. I just feel like that division is wide open with Nick Bosa being hurt and the Rams suffering a loss that maybe they shouldn't have. Like, I thought they gave one away against the great opportunity against the Eagles. Tough division, but I think it's wide open right now.
Yeah, it really is. The Nick Bosa injury is really tough for the Niners, but I won't count any of these teams out, really. And I'm not counting out Sean McVay either. They started 1-5 last year, came back, won the division at 10-7, and had all the tie breaks they needed. So it's going to be a battle for, you know, 18 weeks in that NFC West. You got to win your division games, especially your road division games. If you can win those on the road, then you give yourself a chance. Big one, big opportunity for the Seahawks tonight.
Joel Klatt talked about the atmosphere. Penn State, Oregon. He's looking at Dante Moore the same way I am.
I think it's going to be incredibly tough for Oregon and their young quarterback, even though he's 3 years now out of high school. But Dante Moore is going to be going into an environment that really he hasn't seen before. This is going to be one of the toughest environments that he's ever going to play in as a quarterback. And this team is going to have to run the football well. They've got a really deep stable of running backs, really six deep at running back. I like their offensive line a lot. They rebuilt that in the transfer portal, and they've got some real weapons on the outside. Now, I think Dante Moore is going to be built for this. I think that he's going to play well. I do think that there's going to be some trouble for them at some point because of that environment.
Look, I think there will be trouble, but I'm eager to see how Dante Moore handles it. And if you look at the season as a journey, and I think people do, most people do, you need this test for Dante Moore in a hostile environment. You need this test for the offensive line. You need this test for defensive backs and linebackers. Oregon needs this. It's going to be a great opportunity for Oregon to get itself together and play a football game that is a meaningful game in a hostile environment and, you know, let it rip and then see where you are. You know, great. Like, what a luxury to have a mulligan or two. If you were a team playing in a major conference, and coaches don't want to hear that. They don't want to go, oh, we go into this game knowing there's going to be a chance for us to lose this game and be better for it. Well, Oregon may get to host a game at Autzen Stadium. They lose this game. I think we argued last year in the Big Ten championship game that Oregon might have been better off losing that game. Certainly now, with hindsight behind us. Washington hosting Ohio State. We got to talk about that later. Dan Lanning's coming up. I want you here for it. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network. Dan Lanning joining us. Tell your Duck fans, get here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
This is my nightmare scenario. It just keeps recurring and recurring and recurring. What it's about to happen, ladies and gentlemen, is Dan Lanning, the Oregon football coach, man of the world, kid from suburban Kansas City, is going to come on the show, and he's gonna make fun of me for the hair restoration commercial that played during the commercial break. So let's let him get it all out. Get it all out. Go ahead.
I just promised your producer I wouldn't say anything. I got nothing to say, man.
You know what I need to do? Next time you're coming on, I'm going to do a fake commercial during the commercial break for something just completely ridiculous. And then just see how you react to it. See how you react to it.
I love it. I just realized, like, hey, I don't want to, you know, affect, you know, people bought their sponsorships. I don't want to mess that up for you, you know. But I just wish you would tap into the resources that you guys are advertising.
Like, I don't. I have a beautiful bald head.
Can you imagine you with a mullet? How awesome that would be!
Maybe I should do that for charity. Like, I'll grow it out. We'll see what happens.
I'm telling you.
You know?
Yeah.
I have a beautiful bald head, though. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm leaning into it.
The truth wouldn't be quite the same if you weren't bald, you know?
Amen.
It wouldn't be.
Amen to
the
that.
The mullet face truth, you know, it just wouldn't be the same.
Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Hey, where are you right now? Where, like, give, set the scene. Like, where are you sitting? Where are you? Where are your feet right now?
I literally just walked into the house. So Thursday's the day we wrap up a little bit early. Had a couple earlier meetings today. We start pretty early on Thursday. But, you know, Titans got football practice here in a second. I'm hoping to catch a little bit of that action. Got a couple Zoom calls later on tonight. And, yeah, get to see the family a little bit. This is like the one day a week you get to see the fam.
I like that. I'm sorry that I'm intruding on it with this interview, but I like that you're going to get to go to practice. Does that feel good to you to be not in charge at a practice?
It's fun, man. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Titan's kind of a, I see him as a, like a strong safety, kind of like he's going to be a big hitter, active.
We're working on the hitting part. He's a jack of all trades. Like, he plays a little running back, a little wide out, a little DB. Little safety, you know, he's kind of all over the place, but what I'm excited about is he loves football, which is pretty cool. You know, the other day he came in to hang out with me and he stayed up late, until I got home, and he climbed in the bed and he's like, "Hey dad, want to hang out?" And he's like, "Oh my gosh, dad, you stink. You smell horrible." I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he reaches like, "You smell." I'm like, and then he smells his own hands. And he realizes he's been wearing these football gloves, and it's himself. I was like, "Man, you're trashing me, and it's you that stinks. It's your hands." But it's kind of a cool feeling for your 12-year-old to have stinky hands because he's wearing football gloves, and they, you know, it's, I don't know, kind of fired me up, you know. So now he's asking, like, "All right, are you allowed to wash football gloves? Do they lose their sticky?" So
I love it.
I don't know.
I love it.
I kind of went off on a tangent there, but yeah, cool moments.
I seem to remember. In a conversation, the very first conversation I had with your parents, they said you had your high school football pants. You never washed them after your last game. Is that true?
Yeah. We lost to Harrisonville, and on the grass, they had painted Harrisonville's blue and Richmond's red and white, and there's like blue stains on my pants. And yeah, we never washed them. I just kind of wanted to remember that loss in the semifinals.
You got to rough. You got it. Do you, I guess the losses always stay with you, maybe in a way that the wins don't, right? Like, still to this day. Why is that?
Oh, yeah. Because it matters. Because it matters. When it matters to you, man, that's what you remember those.
Is it that we expect to win, though? And that's part of it. So when we win, that's of course we did. We put in the work, we had a plan. And then when we don't win, we go, okay, what did I do wrong? And you sort of pour through the wreckage looking for, like, how do I get better? How do I improve from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. But I think, like, when you really mature in life, you start to realize you can win a lot. I mean, you're going to learn a lot from a win, but you can learn a lot from a loss. And you can be motivated, man. If you're intrinsically motivated and you hate that feeling, like, that can be an unbelievable motivator.
You've been using that intrinsic, extrinsic thing. Is that something that you've been reading about or somebody's been taught? You've been thinking about it, haven't you?
No, I guess I've gotten the question. I've kind of always had that same thought process, but I guess maybe I've gotten a question that's brought it up twice this week. Where else did I use it?
It came up in a...
Oh, Jim Rome. Yeah, I think
yes,
I said
it was
Jim Rome.
Yes, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, you want to be intrinsically motivated, man. That's important, right? Are you intrinsically motivated, John?
Yeah, you have to be, because if it's the extrinsic stuff, that's not lasting. That doesn't stay with you. That doesn't, you know, that's transactional. That's not, you know, I think
be a
you
letdown
get
at some point, right?
Yeah,
you realize it's not fulfilling.
Yeah, it doesn't do it. And then I think it's a hard thing to teach people, though, because so much of like our culture becomes about, you know, achieving and getting the trophy or the award or the job, or, you know, that's what the money's for. Don Draper and Mad Men, you know, that's what the money's for. It's for it. So it becomes, you know, but having it be part of your nature, having it be internal.
Yeah
it's got to come from within. It's almost religious, isn't it? Like, you know, you grew up in a household that you have belief. It's got to come from within you, right?
For sure. Like, it's just this, this mindset that you can affect change and you can create, you know, a little bit for yourself, I think, is part of it for me.
I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I liked what you said about Charlie Kirk and, you know, just kind of the idea of a locker room having people from all walks of life. And, like, can't we all learn from a football locker room where you've got people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different religions, different races, and you guys come together on a game and it's like, this is a machine that is, you know, all pointed in the same direction. Like, I think I'll even go back to your kid playing sports. I just think it starts really young where you learn to be part of something bigger than yourself and work with other people.
Yeah.
And be tolerant. But I love that you said that. Why was that important to you?
You know, I've always felt like, when you have a stage, when you have an opportunity to speak your mind, like, shame on you if you don't. And, I felt like that there's been a couple times, you know, in life for me where I've had an opportunity to say something that mattered, and you get asked the right question, you get an opportunity to say it, you should answer it how you feel. And, that was one of those moments, you know, that, like, people are cool. You know, sometimes we, like, lose sight of that, like, how unbelievably impressive is human life. And there's a lot of differences, and there's a lot of people that are different. But when you recognize, like, how special human life is, when you have a kid for yourself, when you have great parents, and you get to experience a cool relationship at work that you're like, man, when I'm around this person, it makes me feel a certain way. And recognize that those people probably do the same thing for other people. Like, that's something we should really value. And I just, you know, at times I think we lose a lot of sight of that. So, hope in this world, man, I'm a glass half full guy. I'm hopeful this world can recognize, like, how cool this place is and how awesome to get to do what all of us get to do. You know, you wake up every day and you make the best of the opportunities you have in front of you. And, you know, why can't everybody have a glass half full, you know? And if we can create some opportunities like that, you know, and recognize that there's going to be differences that, we can all live in a world that's pretty dang awesome. And it can be awesome for everybody, you know, and even if things aren't going well for you at the moment, that doesn't mean they're going to be going, you know, poor for you the next day. You got an opportunity to go make a change and attack it and see where it goes.
I'm still blown away that I have a job where I get to talk about sports and write about sports. And, you know, this is a silly thing. I'll get on a plane. I'll go cover your game. I'll be at the stadium. I'll write what I think. People seem to care what I write and, you know, they subscribe and that's great. I'll come back and talk about it on radio. You get to go get on a plane. You get to go coach a football game. It doesn't feel like work to me. I know it's hard, but I get the impression you enjoy what you do so much that, you know, you'd be doing it somewhere for something if it weren't at Oregon.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love what I get to do. And there's every job has stuff that is not always the best, but coaching football is a pretty dang good job. And so it's a lot of fun.
Where does doing an interview like this rank on not the best? Lay it on me. Like, be honest. Like, does this
suck? No, you're not bad, man.
Does this suck? I'm not bad. Can I put that on a billboard? Not bad. Dan Lanning said not bad.
I don't mind. I don't mind having this combo at all. No, this is good. Is this as fun as coaching at football practice? No, that's football practice a lot more fun. Coaching a game is a whole lot more fun. Watching film is a lot more fun, but. Like, you're on the list. You're not at the bottom.
I'm on the list. I'm gonna put that on my bio. I'm on the list. You enjoy watching film, huh? Like, because I've talked to some guys who go.
Yeah.
So what do you like about watching film? Let's just say you're watching. You don't have to talk about Penn State, but you're watching film of an opponent. What is it that you geek out on?
Well, just the part where you get to say at the end, like, okay, what's the best call I could possibly have against this, right? Because every defense, every offense has a strength and has a weakness, right? If you're loaded up to the box to stop the run, then there's an opportunity for a pass. If you're, if you're playing a certain coverage, like every coverage has a strength, every coverage has a weakness, or vice versa. And the opportunity to get to play
you know, checkers or chess in that moment and say, okay, what's the best call that we can have for this, and it answers the issues that are addressed in that play. Like, that's a lot of fun.
So I'm talking to Jerry DiNardo, former head coach, you know him, Big Ten Network, yeah. And I asked him, I said, you know, Oregon runs this fake punt against Oregon State. I said, they didn't need to run that play to win that game, but they ran it. And I said to DiNardo, do they run that just so they give Penn State something to think about? And he starts laughing. And he says, we used to do that. We used to put a play in. We'd run a play just so, you know, give them a look that they have to think about. Is that what you mean when you're playing chess? I mean, are you doing stuff like that? Or do other coaches and have you had other stops run plays just to go, hey, we're going to run something just to give next week's opponent something to think about?
Well, I think every week you're putting stuff in and trying to run stuff in a game that you're hoping sets up stuff for the future, for sure.
You ran a lot of cloud coverage against Oregon State. See what I'm doing? I'm flexing there a little bit of media flex.
Mm-hmm.
Was that dictated by what Oregon State did, or is that just something in general you guys like? You guys feel comfortable with your personnel playing a lot of cover too?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like, you always want to go out there and run what you think can win and create success in a game, but it's something that we've come comfortable with.
Anything more obnoxious than a media member trying to talk football like they know what they're talking about?
It's pretty funny. It is pretty funny. So, but like, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's you know, it is what it is. But no, I don't mind.
But what I do, because, all right, so when I played my high school and community college football, I was a receiver and a DB. And so I can tell when you're in cover two, or I can tell when, you know, I'm looking at the safety pre-snap. I'm looking at the safeties. What are they doing? I can't tell what's going on at the line of scrimmage. I don't have that level of, but I know enough to talk to people like Nick Aliotti or Anthony Newman or whoever if I have a question.
Yeah.
So you start off where is your area of expertise when you're in high school and maybe even at college, William Jewell College? And then what part of the game did you really have to learn?
Well, I had to learn it all. You know, what I thought I knew and what I knew is night and day. But I was always a defensive guy. I played both ways in high school and then played defense when I was in college, played outside linebacker. And then my first coaching job was actually wide receivers and DBs. So you kind of coach on both sides and special teams. So I feel like I got exposed to a lot, you know, early. But where I learned the most is once I became a GA. And what I thought I knew, I realized I didn't know anything. And then even, you know, probably the next most influential year in my career was going to Alabama and being a graduate assistant and learning, you know, just both sides of the ball there, I think was really important for my career.
Because when you're a GA, are you breaking down things, breaking down film? You're working closely with, you know, guys who have been doing it a lot longer than you at a higher level, and you're just soaking all that up?
Yeah, I was in charge of breakdowns at Alabama. So you break down the opponent, you're typing in all the information that you see and recognize. And then for me, like, the other place that I really learned kind of both sides of the ball was putting myself in a situation where I'm drawing every single card for practice. So like, the scout team's going to run a play, right? And you're going to draw up the play. And then you're going to say, okay, wait, how would they block this if we ran this defense? How would they block this if we ran this call? How would the wide receiver adjust this route if we were in this coverage? So it kind of gave me an opportunity to learn a little bit of both sides of the ball and ask questions. But that was kind of a job I took a lot of pride in when I was at Alabama, is I'm going to draw every single scout card and put myself in a situation where, okay, this is how I think they would block it versus an even front versus an odd front. Or, you know what? Then you start to study and you're like, you know, they never run this play versus an odd front. So maybe it's a check play. Mm. They only run it versus an even run. You just start to learn a little bit more football when you have to do those things.
Jane Lanning with us, Oregon football coach. When do you guys leave? When do you get on the plane, and why with the timing? I'm always curious, like, you know, what you're thinking as far as how much time you want to spend on the ground there versus, you know, get in, get out. Or you're like SEAL Team 6. You want to be there as, you know, least possible. Or how do you get acclimated, all that?
So, you know, we played Northwestern. We played an early game. Obviously, a time zone change. It was kind of 9 a.m. our time. So we left. We ended up leaving Thursday, right? But this week we were playing a night game there. So we'll leave tomorrow morning after we finish our meetings and our walk. We'll have a walkthrough in the morning and we'll travel over there.
Are you talking with like scientists to figure that stuff out, or is that just, you know, your prior experience? You go, hey, this is about when we want to be there. We don't want to be too early and have a bunch of sitting around.
No, we visit with Bill Nye about it and kind of got his opinion. No, I mean, yeah, we talked to NFL teams, sports science. Like, we kind of developed a plan this summer of, hey, when are these games going to be played and what's our thought process based on when the games are played. So if it's a night game, don't feel like we necessarily have to travel 2 days in advance. If it's an earlier game when you're traveling three time zones, then, yeah, you can change that model. And, again, we'll evaluate it after this trip and say, okay, yeah, that worked well for us, or no, we wish we would have done it different. But we've adapted from last year. We've adapted from the year before based on, you know, how far you're traveling, when you're traveling, and why you do what you do.
Now, I'll say this so you don't have to, but Michigan and Ohio State, this wouldn't happen to them. But you have, like, seven opponents that will have all this extra time to prepare for you. Penn State's coming off a bye. You're not. You know, that has to stick in your craw a little bit. Like, you know, can you make a little noise about that? Will the Big Ten listen?
Yeah, no comment.
Yeah, I'll say it, so you don't have to. You know, he said,
yeah,
no,
I
comment.
Mean, somebody should, right? We're traveling,
can you imagine,
15,000 miles this year, and we play seven teams that have more prep time than we do. That's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, and I keep saying,
it's almost,
you know,
like they didn't want us in the Big Ten or something, right?
I'm just looking at it going,
we snuck our way in, didn't we?
The uninvited guest. That's, you know, that's what that should be your motto. We're the uninvited guest. You know, go win the thing. All right, you got it. I'm not going to ask you about the whiteout. It's too much. Everybody's asked you. Who cares? But I will ask you this. From a communication standpoint, when you got, you know, offensive linemen, can you prepare for it? Or is it just like, guys, it's going, like, occasionally something bad's going to happen, and it's going to be how resilient we are and how we react to, you know, situational stuff like that with noise and crowd noise and the environment?
I mean, you do as much as you possibly can, but you're not going to recreate some of those things. But yeah, you do as much as you can. And when you get there, you know, you hope your players say, oh, well, Tuesday practice was kind of hard. It was kind of like this. You know, that's what you're hoping. You hope you get to say, okay, oh, Wednesday was kind of like this when we did this period. And try to replicate it the best you can and play well enough that it ultimately doesn't become a huge factor in the game. But those are the things you can't control. The one way you can't control is with how you play.
All right. I've taken enough of your time. Go to your son's practice. Enjoy your night with your family. And I'll see you in Happy Valley.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. Have a great one.
All right. There he goes. Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. I hope you got all the answers to all the questions that were burning questions. I always love when media members try to talk about 12 personnel, 13 personnel. What front were they in? Let's be real. There's a game within the game that's going on with these coaches that is next level stuff. And I don't think Oregon needed to run that fake punt against Oregon State last week. They didn't need the first down. They didn't need the extra possession. I have to think there was strategy in Oregon going, yeah, we're going to give Penn State one more thing to think about. And Jerry DiNardo will be on tomorrow's show. And my pre-interview with him, he said, you know, sometimes you run something just to get it in the other team's head. And then he goes, I've been the other team. And he says, sometimes you see it and you go, they're just running that to get in our head. We're not going to waste time prepping for it. But you kind of have to. Dan Lanning going out to his kids' game. I like that. They'll be making the trip and getting into Happy Valley, not spending a whole bunch of time there, but they got a football game on Saturday night. It's a 7:30 kick in Pennsylvania, 4:30 here on the West Coast on NBC. It'll be Ohio State and Washington in Seattle. I tend to think Ohio State's going to cover that spread. It has been bet down from like 13 to 10 to now, what is it, 8, 8.5? You know, a lot of money flying on Washington, and a lot of people maybe not believing that Ohio State with a freshman quarterback can go in there. I'm certainly Rick Neuheisel not thinking so, but we got a big football weekend. Georgia, Alabama, we'll talk about it all coming up, plus the 5 at 5, top of the hour.
Got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
really good stuff with Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. I had some inside jokes in there, and I know some of you caught them. For longtime listeners, you will know that Dan Lanning has repeatedly given me a hard time, and either Steven or Judah, whoever is on the board that day, will be the recipient of his cackle as he hears the hair restoration commercials for Advanced Hair, and then it is subsequently becomes a roasting for me. Judah, you happen to be on the other end of that on today's show when Dan Lanning came on. What did he say to you?
Well, he doesn't hear the spot until I put him on hold, but I mentioned to him that it was coming up because I know he looks forward to it so much. And he started laughing right away, and he said, I'm going to try not to bring it up, but, you know, it's too good of a moment on air.
Yeah, I got to lean right into that, too, because if I don't, I know he's going to get me on it, so I might as well take it.
What do you think about the mullet face truth, maybe on an April Fool's or something?
I think, you know, I don't think it has the ring, because people would say bold and bald, you know, so the mullet thing doesn't work. I like that he is aware of the branding. It says that tells me the branding's working. I did kind of have some fun with him there because one of the things that drives me bonkers, and I've talked to Lanning about this, is when media members who don't really know football, they don't really know football, try to talk football with a football coach. This is like, you know, you're talking to a concert pianist at Carnegie Hall, and this is like me trying to talk about the piano. Well, you know, I was doing this with my piano and all this. And so they humor you. You know, it's probably the same as sometimes, you know, I will get people who tell me, like, you know, what I should be doing. And I'm sure that exists in other industries. We drive by an ODOT crew working on the side of the road, and we all go, oh, there's a bunch of guys standing around. Well, if you actually talk to the ODOT people, there's a reason it looks like a bunch of guys are standing around. So I was kind of having fun with him a little bit because I know it also kind of bothers him. And I've told him before, I said, you know, I can't stand it when people in our media group start talking 12 personnel, 13 personnel. So that's why I said to him, I noticed you guys were playing a little cloud coverage against Oregon State because Trent Walker had mentioned it earlier, the Oregon State wide receiver. He said they were in cloud quite a bit. That's cover two safeties. And I could feel Dan Lanning smiling as he was answering the question. I wanted to know where he was because they left for the Northwestern game really early. Like, Oregon left a day early for the Northwestern game, and I kind of wondered if they would already be on the road for this Penn State game. But there seems to be, like, they checked with their sports science department, not Bill Nye. There seems to be some prevailing thought that them not arriving too early for a night game on Saturday night, like, they don't go out on a Thursday, they go out on a Friday. I find that interesting because I would think you'd want to get there and get acclimated, but Oregon's obviously studied this. They want to be there like 24 hours in front of the game. They're going to do their thing. They're going to get the extra night of sleep, like the night before sleep. And I've talked with Chip Kelly and I've talked to sports scientists about this. It's not the night before the game that you want good sleep and a good meal. Of course you do want good sleep and a good meal, but that's not where it's most important. It's the night before. And that's where you set the tone. And so Oregon has taken advantage of that good night of sleep that they're going to get tonight on Thursday night. Then they're going to get on a plane. They're going to fly across the country. It is not an easy flight. Trust me, I was booking my flight. And it is not easy to get from the Pacific Northwest all the way to Happy Valley. You got to fly into Harrisburg. You got to fly into Philadelphia. You got to fly into Pittsburgh. And all of those involve a drive of at least 90 minutes, in some cases 3 hours or more. And so for Oregon, they will fly charter. They'll fly direct. Now, they probably should put me on their plane, save me some trouble. But that's another conversation for another day. I will fly out and get in late tomorrow night, and then, you know, get up and drive all the way into Happy Valley and, you know, just set the scene, and I'll start reporting and writing and posting and tweeting and posting on the gram and posting on TikTok, and I'll do my thing. But I'm fascinated that Oregon's not getting there all that early, not all too early. Judah, does it surprise you they're not already there? I kind of wondered because they went to Northwestern on a Thursday. They took off early. And on this one, they're not. They're leaving on Friday.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little bit surprised. I just kind of assume that when you're going across the country, you leave maybe a day earlier. But it is interesting. I also, when Oregon initially went to the Big Ten, they were talking about the travel accommodations that Oregon has now. And I wonder how much that plays into it as well, to where, you know, there's a certain level of comfort and, you know, they're catered to enough with their travel situations that, yes, it's a long distance, but maybe it's not as much wear and tear on the body traveling out there as it might be for, you know, the rest of us.
I also think his comments about it's like they didn't want us in the conference. There's definitely a feel that Ohio State and Michigan get special treatment. If you talk to Penn State, they say the same stuff. They're like, you know, we're supposed to be. We've competed at this level. We have these wins. You look at our record over the last 10 years, but they don't get like the kind of treatment that Ohio State and Michigan get. Ohio State and Michigan don't get in these Friday night games. They, you know, the conference always goes, well, we don't need people driving, you know, trying to drive in Michigan on a November Friday night. And I'm like, have you been in Oregon on a November Friday night? It's not like it's all that more safe for people to be on I-5 driving through pouring rain and potential ice at that hour. So, Michigan and Ohio State, like, you know, Ward Manuel, the AD at Michigan, has said, you know, they won't play those games. And I'm like, okay, who else? Like, if Purdue or Indiana said that, like, everyone would laugh at them. They get special treatment. Oregon, I think, you know, look, what's the upper echelon of the Big Ten? It's not just Ohio State and Michigan right now. It's Ohio State, Michigan. It's Oregon and Penn State. Then there's a gap. And then I would argue that in that next tier, it's Indiana, potentially USC. And then we start talking about schools like Illinois or Iowa. And, you know, and you can move down from there. But I am eager to see at what point, if ever, Oregon gets treated like Michigan or Ohio State. And Oregon State fans probably heard Dan Lanning saying, you know, it's like they didn't want us in here, and went, well, that's what you get for going to that conference. You could have been the big fish in the Pac-12 conference. Those are two different conversations. We can have that conversation, and certainly it's a fair one to have. Like, you know, are all the Pac-12 schools that left, are the 10 schools that left, including Cal and Stanford, including the Arizona schools in Utah and Colorado, including UCLA and USC and Oregon and Washington, how many, you know, a decade from now are we going to look back and say they're better off because of it? I wonder if Oregon's going to be the only one. The 5 at 5 is coming up. I've got the 5 biggest stories for you and a lot to say about it. Leave it here. Got the BFT.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I got a bunch of listeners who are emailing me and tweeting at me and DMing me and telling me how they're getting to the Oregon-Penn State game. If you're going to the game, I would love to hear from you. 503-417-7575. How are you getting there? Where are you flying? What time are you leaving? What is the what is that experience going to be like? 503-417-7575. We got a quick segment here as we lead you into Thursday Night Football. But we're going to do the 5 at 5. I'll take a couple calls, too. I want to know how you're getting to the big game. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, I think we're going to start in Major League Baseball, where the Seattle Mariners have been one of the best stories of the Major League Baseball season, if not the best story of the season. They have clinched a spot in the playoffs. They are a team that a lot of people are saying could be dangerous. Could they win the American League pennant? Could they do a little more? Could they win it all? Cal Raleigh, catcher, defensive specialist, at least that's what he used to be known as, has 60 home runs. 60. And yet the national pundits, like Jeff Passan, my good friend from the Fresno Bee, who, by the way, covered Aaron Judge when he was in college at Fresno State, goes on the Dan Patrick Show and says Aaron Judge should be the MVP.
Aaron Judge's OPS right now is 175 points higher than Cal Raleigh's. Are you telling me that because Cal Raleigh has a home run total that ends in a round number, and that because Cal Raleigh happens to play with really good guys surrounding him and a team that went out and got Josh Naylor and Geno Suarez at the deadline that helped push them toward that division title, are you telling me all that makes up, along with the defensive elements, for that 175-point gap, which is real, which is significant, and which is enormous?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I love it. Are you telling me all that? Yeah, I am. That's what I'm telling you. I think Dan Patrick's playing the game, the absurd game that Jeff Passan's playing there. He's playing it right back at him, telling him how ridiculous it is. Yeah, okay, it's not really about round numbers. It's about the fact that the Mariners, a team that has never won a World Series, the only team, never appeared, never won, never even made it to the World Series, the only team in Major League Baseball, that the Mariners are where they're at. They're not there without Cal Raleigh. You got to tip your cap to the guy.
Number two.
Cal Raleigh played for the Yankees. Would someone feel different? The Lakers are leaving LeBron's future up to LeBron. The Lakers have extended J.J. Redick, and LeBron is entering his eighth season with the Lakers. Has it been 8 years? He's in a contract year. The lack of a long-term deal between the Lakers and James, who is 40, has fueled speculation about whether or not he's got a long-term future with the Lakers. Rob Pelinka, GM of the Lakers, insisted today that the Lakers hope to remain in the LeBron business as long as he wants to be in business. He said, first thing we want to do in terms of LeBron is give him absolute respect to choose his story. He's earned that right. I do kind of shudder at the idea of somebody earning their right. There's a certain limit to that in my mind. You don't want to give LeBron everything and just be like, you call all the shots at the detriment of your franchise. I will, as a Niner fan, I can remember Joe Montana did not get to call his shot. They traded him, cleared the way for Steve Young. Ronnie Lott and Roger Craig didn't get to call their shot and determine how it ended. They became expendable. They ended up with the Raiders across town. There becomes a moment where LeBron at 40 isn't worth the $52 million they're paying him, and you're right up against that moment.
Number three.
Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer, I've talked about him a lot this week. The pundits love him. He's hurt, too. He posted on social media that the procedure on a broken bone in his right hand was successful. One of the leading hand and wrist surgeons in the country, Dr. Stephen Shin, performed the procedure in Los Angeles. Mateer's expected to miss a month, suffered the injury in Saturday's win over Auburn, despite finishing the game with 11 straight completions. Nothing short of remarkable. Oklahoma faces Texas on October 11th. October 11th. Mateer expected to be out a month. Feels a little ambitious for him to get back there. But the Sooners close out the regular season with five straight games against ranked opponents. Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, LSU. Mateer expected to be back somewhere in that run. Good luck to him.
Number four.
Well, you heard Oregon coach Dan Lanning on the show just a few minutes ago talking about their trip to Penn State. Ducks will depart tomorrow. They'll be on the ground in Pennsylvania tomorrow night. They're staying in Harrisburg. That is where I am staying. So about a 90-minute bus ride for the Ducks from Harrisburg into Happy Valley on game day. That game will kick off 7:30 local time, 4:30 Pacific time. You can see it on NBC. And it'll go head-to-head with Georgia and Alabama on ABC. Huge college football weekend.
Number five.
Finally, number five. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, joined us in hour one. Players only meeting at Oregon State. Mateer at Oklahoma being a leader in his locker room. Trent Walker at Oregon State being a leader in his locker room. The difference between those two guys is that one of them is available to play this week and the other isn't. Oregon State has got to come out tomorrow night against Houston at home and play an encouraging football game. That's the bar for Oregon State. They are a double-digit dog at home, almost a 14-point underdog, 13.5-point underdog at home. Insult to injury, slap in the face, whatever you want to call it. If you're an Oregon State fan, you are looking for this team to play clean football, good football, winning football. All those things go hand in hand in hand in hand. But big college football weekend nonetheless. And a big NFL game coming up in just a few minutes right here on 750 The Game as the Seahawks and Cardinals will mix it up in a game that Judah Newby expects will result in a Seahawks victory by two scores. Now, is that two field goals, 6 points? Is it a safety and an extra point? Those are scores. Is it three? Is it two touchdowns?
No, two extra points, a 2 point win. No. I think it's 10 or more. I say double digits. So a two possession win. I got a defensive score for the Seahawks in this one.
Oh, wow.
So again, kiss of death, but let's ride, man. Let's have
Seahawks
some fun.
Minus 1.5. I mean, should I be jumping on this right now?
You know
what I mean?
What I say, don't take my word for it, but it's up to you. I'm not exactly sharp on these things. I will say that, but okay. It's a feeling. It's a feeling about a team against another team. Short week, no James Conner. Seahawks getting some reinforcements on defense. I like Mike McDonald. So the other thing, if this game was played in like week 13 or 14, I feel like this would be like a 9-6 game, a 10-6 game, just like the Thursday night game was against the Bears last year. But because it's so early in the year, I think there's going to be some gameplay and design stuff from both sides, and I think there will be some fireworks tonight. It'll be fun.
Well, it should be fun. It'll be entertaining, to say the least. I would love for people to tell us how they're getting to State College, PA. Are you going to the Oregon-Penn State game? Are you listening to the show and going? 503-417-7575. Love for you to chime in and tell us how you're getting there. I think it would be a fun exercise, an interesting exercise. I'll say this. I originally looked at flying from Portland through Chicago to Pittsburgh. And then I talked with Brad Capel, who we had on the show, Wednesday, and he's coming back on Friday to kind of talk to us about the scene right in front of day before the game, coming out on tomorrow's show. But Capel told me, like, hey, going into Pittsburgh's fine. It's good. That's one way to do it. He says you're also looking at kind of a slog on game day. It could be like a three-hour drive into the stadium. So I said to myself, do I really want a three-hour drive into the stadium, on the day of the game? And I went, let me see what else is out there. Then I looked at Philadelphia, not a great option, still a long drive. Then I looked at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It was more expensive. It is. But it also got you within 90 minutes, and it seemed to me that that was the best option. Now, I'm glad to hear that the Ducks are flying into Harrisburg, too, because I feel like I made the right choice. I'm going into the right airport. But really interesting to kind of look at how Oregon is getting there and how other people are getting there. I'd be fascinated by what people learn in traveling to Penn State. And on tomorrow's show, it'll be Jerry DiNardo of the Big Ten Network. He's a former coach at LSU, former coach at Indiana. He'll have a lot to say about playing in a whiteout situation. He'll be right on the show at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Be here for that. Fantastic guy and a son of a New York City cop. Grew up in Queens and Brooklyn. And then Jake Butts, Big Ten Network analyst, will be with us. Brian Capel will be with us. John Wilner will be with us. Friday show loaded tomorrow and taking us right into that big matchup. Thanks to Judah. Thanks to Steven. Thanks to all the interns and all the production assistants. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time.